Everybody likes guns, they just don't know it. Deep inside of his soul, there's a cowboy trying to get out.
Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Hello and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 143. I'm one of your hosts, Mike, and tonight with me I have Thomas.
Hello.
And Benny.
Hello.
How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm in pain.
I'm sweating.
Everyone has a nice visual now.
Yeah, you, the two old crippled guys.
Than last week. Hey, I'm not old or crippled.
I'm both right now.
So, Thomas, what did you do this week?
I threw out my back, so I'm on painkillers and anti-inflammatories and muscle relaxers. So, getting up and down is hard enough. I was planning to go to the match today, and if I was just standing there, that's fine. But there's no way I could be running and gunning. I'd run 3 feet and I'd collapse in pain, so I didn't do anything. I did actually finally sell my Arsenal Strike One pistol.
Woohoo!
It's gone. So now I can buy that Browning BL-22 that I want.
That's good.
And I've been daydreaming a lot, too, that Canadian CCFR giveaway. Well, if you go to the International Shooting Supplies, they've got... I filled up my shopping cart just pretending if I did win. So if my name gets called, I can hit send instantly. I know exactly what I'm going to buy if I win that thing. Last time I looked, when they did the last draw, they had like almost 1,800 people in the draw. So I'm assuming it's probably doubled that by now. So I've got one chance where Mike has five chances. So I doubt Mike will probably win it before I do.
No, I won't. Sarah will win it before I do. I never win when it comes to random draws. That's why if you ever, like at the charity shoot, I don't put any tickets in. Sarah puts all the tickets in. Do I need to remind you of last year's charity shoot and Sarah's tickets?
I get lucky. I like enter things that no one's entered. And that's the only reason why I win. I win because no one else has entered.
Oh, the yeah. The Canadian Patriot podcast giveaway.
I won that. I'm pretty sure I won a lock from Sfarm Arms. How do you pronounce their name? Seraphim Arms? I don't know. My Hebrew's poking out there probably. No, they make the 1911s and stuff.
Okay.
So they did a thing with when the Ruger 1020, I think it was the Ruger 1020 Mag thing was coming out. They said write your MP and then send us like a picture, a screenshot of it, and the first 50 people will send a cable lock, and then one of those people will be entered. You'll be entered to win like one of their self-healing targets. So I won one of their locks. Yeah.
Well, that's good. It still counts as a win.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, isn't it Seraphim Armories? It's out in BC, isn't it?
I don't know where they are, but yeah, it's that one.
Okay. All right, so I guess that's it for you, Thomas.
Yeah, I pulled the George, did the old guy thing this week, so yeah, that's it for me. What about you, Mike?
I shot an I-Corps match today.
Excellent.
It went well. So when I showed up, the guy who's running it, I talked to him last match, and he said he had an extra, a CR Speed holster that he wasn't using, and he asked me, do I want it? I said, sure, I'll buy it off you. So he... when I showed up, he just handed me a holster and said, here you go. I said, oh, how much do I owe you? And he's like, oh, don't worry about it. He said, you know, play with it this week. There's another match next weekend. We'll both be there. He said, if you like it, he said, I'll sell it to you. And he said, I'll sell it to you for a really good price. He said, if you don't like it, then just give it back. And that's it. We'll go our own ways. So I'm actually getting to test run a new holster. So that should be fun.
Is it a Speed holster?
Yes, it is I've never used one of these. I haven't even put it on my belt yet because I got home and went to bed. It has a nub that you put in the end of your barrel, and then it locks in the trigger guard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Do you need that nub, or is the trigger locking mechanism enough?
Do I need the piece that goes in the end of the barrel, you mean?
Yeah, like I don't really have an issue with it, but Americans seem to always have an issue with putting things in the end of their barrels. So
I could see if you were seriously concerned about that you're going to pull your gun out and the little nub that you put it in was going to break off and be stuck in the end of your barrel, and you pull that first shot off, you know, and then you look like, what was the hunter with the rabbit?
Elmer Fudd.
Elmer Fudd.
Thank you. That's who I'm thinking of. Yeah. but I don't know. I haven't played with it enough to really know if I have an issue with it. But as far as I can tell, I see people run them with it like that all the time, and they don't seem to have an issue with it. So,
and that's legal in ICOR?
In ICOR, yeah. In ICOR, there's pretty much no holster. Like, well, I mean, there's holster rules pretty much, you know, have to securely hold your gun and cover up the trigger guard.
But you couldn't run that in an IDPA match though, right?
No, not in IDPA, but from what I understand, I could run that in IPSEC, I think.
Yeah, you can run it in IPSEC. Open. Yeah.
No, actually, I think someone told me, and I don't have my black badge course, so don't believe what I say, but I heard someone say that in IPSEC, it's like ICOR, there's no holster rules.
Well, it just has to hold
I say there's no holster rules, but what I mean is there's no like, oh, it has to be, you know, your clamshell, Blaytac, you know, fully covering style.
No, right? they even got rid of the retention. There was a rule about retention device. They even got rid of that. You don't have to have a retention device.
Yeah. Actually, now that you say that, that reminds me, in ICOR, the rule says that your gun has to be securely held in, and you have to be able to jump, and both feet have to leave the ground at least an inch up. And if your gun stays in your holster, then you're good. Because technically, when I do that, if you listen, you can hear my gun kind of like free float in the air because it's not really being retained. It's just so heavy that it won't fly out. So like, you know, most guns, if you put like enough retention on it, you could do a handstand. It won't fall out. Mine would just fall out if I did that.
Yeah, I was thinking like, okay, so you just like you go on your tippy toes and then pull your knees up as high as you can.
Yeah.
Because then your feet are off the ground, right? But your top half of your body hasn't moved.
Yeah. If you saw the age of most ICOR participants, I don't think they would be nimble enough to pull a maneuver like that off. You know, okay. Have you or oh no, you said you were behind on your podcast.
Yeah.
Because Bolivar mentioned me in Modern Rifleman Radio, and his comment was he has no idea why any 20-something-year-old would be interested in revolver shooting. So that should kind of show you the age range of that. Anyway, so I showed up to the match.
I think I'm actually on that episode right now.
Oh, yep. Yeah? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in the middle.
The podcast recap episode.
Oh, no, I'm on the pistol carbine. Caliber carbine, so I guess I'm really far behind. It's not even on my playlist.
Yeah. Yep. So I showed up to the match, shot a few stages, and talking to someone. And the first two stages were like 30 rounds each. So I asked someone, oh, how many rounds is this match supposed to be? Oh, it's 150. Oh, I thought it was only 100, and I brought 150 rounds with me.
Good thing you did.
Did you hit every shot?
Well, that's just it. Then someone said, oh, no, there's a Texas Star coming up. I'm like, oh, no, how many rounds am I going to dump into this? Lucky for me, I think I actually brought 148 rounds. I don't remember what the actual minimum round was. It's just in the email, I guess he just said roughly 150 shots. I had 4 rounds left over at the end of the match. Good. So like I said, I shot a Texas Star. That was the very first time I shot one. I was actually supposed to be first to shoot it, and I asked the guys, and I said, oh, do you guys mind if I go back a little bit further? Because I've never shot one of these. I have no idea how, like, you know, I'm sure there's strategy to it and all this other stuff, and I've never actually seen one, you know, start spinning around, besides on YouTube where the person just, you know, it looks like they just close their eye and bing, 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 5 shots, and it's down. I'm not going to do that. So they all let me go. I cleared it in 7 shots. I was super happy about that.
Isn't there like some trick where you can hit it in the middle and knock all the plates off? Or
I think you need a shotgun to do that.
Oh, yeah?
Okay. Well, I seem to remember Trevor or Matthew, I think they said that, and they had that in one of their 3 guns, and people realized it, so they just shoot the center with their shotgun, and all the plates would fall off.
Right, I remember someone, because I think Trevor was saying he makes that the center thing a no-shoot for that reason.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
See, I kind of don't understand that in the sense of, I'm surprised that they wouldn't just call that a range malfunction and make the person do a reshoot, right? Like, we're in this match, there was a woman, she shot one steel, and the second one, and the one beside it fell down at the same time. So it was considered a range malfunction, so they stop her, and they let her shoot the stage again.
So I should have done that at the charity shoot.
Well, just hit the stand and knock them all over?
No, I shot a clay, it broke and knocked over the clay next to it. So I just continued going because I saw the clay fell down. I didn't check to see if it had a hole in it, but they counted it as a miss.
Yeah, I've had that happen in three gun before. And the rule of thumb that I've generally done and most ROs kind of seem to accept is you just blast another shot into the berm. And kind of like, I took the shot. I'm doing air quotes, you know, because everyone can see me. I took the extra shot, right? I'm not, you know, getting ahead by taking one less shot. But it depends on your arrow and how their rules are, whether they how they want to play it.
Because technically, if you don't take this shot, they could count it as a miss.
Yeah, well, or depending on your rule set, some clubs would call that a failure to engage for even attempting to shoot it.
That's true, too.
So, it, like I said, it really just depends on your club and how their set of rules are set up. But yeah, so that was a great time. A lot of great shooters. Yeah. And that's all I did this week. What'd you get up to, Benny?
So I at first, like, I don't know, it's starting to become a trend. I think I did nothing in the week, and I write like in the show notes, I've done nothing this week. And then I'm like thinking and thinking and thinking, and everyone else is saying all the stuff they did. And I'm like, oh, I did, you know, like half a dozen things. So what did I do this week? I finally got my Marlin 795 in the mail. So that's here. Now I got to find some kind of glass for it. Although I might stick it with, I'm not sure if I'm going to stay with iron sights or not. They're not bad, but I don't know. Glass just looks cooler.
So if you had a chance to actually like get out, like not necessarily take it to the range, but if you had a chance to play with it at home a little?
So a little bit. I didn't realize this at the time, but then I finally decided, you know, I want to see if I can dry fire it. So I looked in the manual, couldn't see anything about dry firing, but I noticed it has a magazine disconnect, and I just, whatever. No comment on that one.
Well, Matt's YouTube channel actually has a video on how to
disable that.
Deactivate the safety. Not telling you to do it. I'm saying it can be done.
Not that us here at New Shooter Canada condone disabling a safety.
No, we do not.
But McClatchy tells you how to do it.
Yeah.
So
you didn't hear it from us, you heard from Matt.
No. Slamfire Radio. Do it at a friend's house.
Yeah.
So I got my Marlin 795. Magazine's a little tight, but I think I'm assuming that's a Marlin thing. So
yeah, they're all like that.
We'll see. Because it actually, interestingly enough, now like I've played with, I used your 1022 Thomas at the Maple Seed. I just got a Marlin 795. My dad just got the Remington 957, and I got to play with that at home a little bit. I'm interested now in trying to see if I can take all three of them to the range one day and just, you know, see what happens.
Do a little bit of comparison.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, not that I'm a very, very talented shooter, but see what happens. But right now, my dad's Remington didn't come with iron sights, and they didn't have the glass in, so we're waiting for that to. He's waiting for that to come in. So right now, it's just a plain Picatinny rail. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see where that goes.
Did Stan order the fixed four power rimfire or the 3x7 rimfire?
I think he got the 3x9. He's getting, I want to say, Bushnell. I don't know. I was trying to convince him to go with Calgary Shooting Center was offering something for, oh man, I have no recollection. They were offering like a 6x24 for $140 or something. And I think it was a Burris, and or no, it was a Bushnell, and we have a Burris now. Yeah, it's a Bushnell for like, and as far as I know, Bushnell's pretty good, right? But he was convinced he wanted a Nikon, so he's going with his $200 Nikon.
Yeah, instead. He said he was going to get the Nikon rimfire.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't have $50 to spend on a scope right yet, so I guess I'll have to wight.
Well, at least you still have iron sights, right?
Right, that is a positive thing.
Yeah, it's not like you can't go shoot because you don't have glass.
Yeah. So I did that this week. Worked more on my business a little bit. Nothing too monumental. Worked in construction that's not gun related. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to guns in the news. Who wants to do story number one?
I'll take it. I haven't read it yet, but I'll take it. Authorities say a vendor setting up at Tanner Gun Show in Denver, Colorado, accidentally shot an employee Saturday, from guns.com. CBS Denver reported the dealer violated show policy when the loaded gun discharged and hit an employee in the leg, and that investigators with Adams County Sheriff's Office are still looking into the incident. One witness reported the gun was the vendor's own personal firearm that the vendor had carried concealed into the show. This act would have violated show policy, which stipulates all firearms brought into the show must be unloaded and zip-tied, even if the owner has concealed carry permit.
So I wouldn't want to be working for him.
No. How could that have happened? Like, the answer is stupidity, but...
Yeah.
Why are you pulling out a loaded gun and pointing it at another employee's leg? Well, I'm assuming he wasn't intentionally pointing at the employee's leg, but then you intentionally pull the trigger.
You know what I could totally see happening? It's probably like a Glock or something, and he like dropped the mag, forgot to rack the slide, and then pointed it in a random direction, thinking it was a safe direction, and pulled the trigger.
And like it ricocheted off the ground and came back up and hit Buddy in the leg.
Or he just, you know, he didn't really aim. Like, you know how Andrew, like going back to what Andrew said at the Ragnarok course, like focus down the sights and pull the trigger, you know, make every shot count kind of thing. Probably just like pointed it down, looked away, and pulled the trigger, right? And then it ended up just like shooting his employee in the leg. So I don't know. We weren't there. We were just speculating here, but yeah, I can totally see that happening.
Yeah. But the whole idea of the fact that you go to a gun show and in the state that allows concealed carry doesn't allow you to conceal carry at a gun show seems kind of weird in itself to me.
That is weird. It makes sense. And I feel like this story underlines that. But I feel like there was stupidity involved, which.
Why is he even unholstering it at the gun show?
Yeah, there's
question number one. Like the only possible thing I can think of is like a situation where, like Benny described, where the guy went into the show, went, "Oh no, I forgot about this," and he's like, "I'm not going back out to my car just to unload my gun. I'll just do it here behind the table. No one will see it." And he accidentally lights one off, and smokes his buddy in the leg.
Everyone has a desk pop.
Jeez. Anyways.
I need to watch that movie again to actually properly like appreciate that reference I just made.
What movie is that?
I think it's The Other Guys. Yeah. Will Ferrell and... Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right, I'll take story number two. Running, ducking, shooting, handgun aficionado descend on Alberta for national competition. So this is by the CBC. I couldn't find an author. Handgun competitors from across Canada and some from other countries of the world descended on a secluded property west of Calgary this week to take part in the International Practical Shooting Confederation Canadian Championships. It's great. It's really great. It's hard. I've got really tough competition in my standard division, said 55-year-old Colleen Piper, the top female shooter for her division in Alberta. Sport involves navigating a series of courses, ducking, running, bobbing, and weaving as you shoot a handgun at targets, reloading your weapon as you go. Approximately 380 competitors were on hand for the nationals. Competitors are judged on accuracy and speed, but safety is a primary concern. If you do any small safety infraction, you're stopped, you're unloaded, and you don't get to compete the whole rest of the match, said Piper. It's very safe. Frank Vaz is the man in charge of ensuring safety is front and center in people's minds. He's the range master for the competition. We just don't tolerate any infractions at all when it comes to safety, he says. competitors that run afoul of these safety rules, which include pointing your gun in the wrong direction or having your finger on the trigger while reloading, are knocked out of the competition. Despite the safety measures, the issue of firing guns can be a polarizing one. The people that are against it, I don't think, really understand what we're doing, said Piper. We really notice that a lot. Now we're starting to get the exposure and people are starting to realize that this is a great sport to be in. Ben Stoger traveled from the U.S. to take part in the match. Even though he can't take the title, he's won the U.S. Nationals 5 times. That's supposed to be 2 sentences. Oh, well. What I like to do to improve myself is to travel around and shoot other countries' matches, because every country is a little bit different, he said. So if I want to learn myself and get better and grow, then I have to travel around to other countries. He said the separate elements of the sport are relatively simple, but when they're put together with the pressure of a timer, it can be a challenge. So who do the Canadians compare to their cousin south of the...
CBC writing.
I know. I think it's supposed to say, so how do the Canadians compare to their cousins south of the border? Of course, in the U.S., we have a lot of shooters, so it's tough to compete with us. Yeah.
That's not even a little bit true. Oh, come on. Canadians consistently shoot better than the Americans. At least from my understandings.
Yeah. I do understand kind of in respect what they're saying, right? When there's 100 of them, you know, it's almost like the logic of, oh, I'll just, you know, with an automatic rifle, I'll launch 100 bullets downrange and at least one will hit the bad guy as opposed to the guy who just takes one accurate shot.
I'm just surprised that the CBC is doing a fairly unbiased reporting of the Ipswich Nationals.
Yeah,
I don't think it's unbiased, though. Whoever they got to write this clearly is not the best when it comes to writing in English. And I suck at English writing. Like, if you guys go to my website, I didn't write any of that. That's all my wife. My grammar and spelling is atrocious, but even I know these sentences don't sound proper.
But it is good.
I might just be nitpicking at this point.
Yeah. It is good, though, to see what I'll call a relatively positive story coming from the CBC about firearms. So,
yeah.
Even though their spelling is atrocious.
Well, it's not the spelling. Spellcheck does it all for you. It's grammar.
Grammar was... And they called firearms weapons, and that's like a taboo in Canada.
I will say this. I think they only said it once.
Yeah.
Which I feel kind of like... I feel like there was like two people arguing there. One person wanted to change every time the word gun was used and wanted to change it all to weapons. And someone else said, well, you know, that's not what the guy actually said. The guy said firearm or gun as opposed to weapon. So,
right. I was going to say, like, how many times is it mentioned?
Yeah. Oh, well, it's publicity, right? And it's publicity of a national event. And, you know. Maybe there's someone out there who will see that and go, wow, that looks like fun, right?
Oh, it is,
right? So, I mean, if it gets more people out there, then whether it's biased or not, that's still good for us. We get another one. Or someone else gets out there and tries it. So, Thomas, why don't you take us away with what's new in the industry?
Well, with the demise of H&R making their single actions, or the single shot shotguns, Savage has jumped in the game. So Stevens by Savage Arms is pleased to offer practical hunters more performance from a trusted single shot break action shotgun platform with a rugged, reliable Stevens 301. And these new single shots from Savage should be shipping, right now they're shipping. The Stevens 301 features a crisp, reliable, break action, and rugged. It should have been crisp trigger. Modern synthetic stock that can withstand brutal abuse of field. It's available in 410 as well as 12 and 20. And the retail price I didn't put in here. The retail price go from $179 to $199, I believe. And it's actually, I put some pictures in there. It actually has the thumb safeties on the side, so it's ergonomical. And it comes with removable choke tubes. So I'm not sure if they're made in the U.S. or if they're made in Turkey?
If it's Stevens, I'm guessing it's Turkey. That safety looks like it's... I'm looking at that, and I'm just thinking, at a right-handed shooter, would your thumb wrap that far around to work that safety?
Pushing it down, yeah, to engage it, I don't think so.
Okay.
If you turn it off, you probably could. Engaging would be tricky.
Yeah.
But I guess at that point, you're taking your hand off. You're not shooting anyways, right? So.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe that's just my ignorance, but besides price, why did anyone buy a single shot? I could see like a single shot, like 50 BMG or something like that, but
there's some top of the line trap guns that are single shot.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you shoot trap, it's only one shot at a time, as opposed to skeet where it's two shots at a time. So I could see that, but
don't you want a heavy gun for shotgun sports? This is my ignorance showing through.
Generally, I think that's the most people's train of thought when it comes to like the trap and the skeet and those kind of things.
It definitely is. I have a single shot H&R trap gun. It's got a really nice walnut stock, and the stock is designed for trap shooting. You do 2-3 rounds of trap with that thing, your arm, even with the light target loads, your arm is beat up because that gun can't weigh more than 3.5-4 pounds.
Oh, they are really light.
Oh, okay. Yeah, beat you right up. In a 12 gauge, it's brutal.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's really where this gun comes in handy, is if you're going for a hike and you want a gun, either you want a gun with you for bear defense, because everyone needs a gun for bear defense, or if you plan on, you know, maybe going after some partridge or whatever while you're hiking around, you can grab this as a lighter option than carrying two barrels.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a cheaper alternative for the new hunter. If you don't have the $300 for a Stevens pump, but you have $200 for a single shot, no, anything to get you started. I know a lot of people started with actual single shots. My first shotgun I ever got was a single shot.
Yeah, and I understand the theory. If you're the theory of hunting, you know, you're trying to do it in one shot anyways. So I could see someone saying, almost having the logic of, well, you only need one. Well, I'd say an experienced person only needs one.
But you're right, they're not as popular as they used to be, because when I was a kid, a lot of people have single shots. And when we had Chris from NAS Guns and Ammo on, what, 2 years ago? And he said that's the one gun that hardly doesn't sell at all. He's got a warehouse full of stuff. They're not selling. Nobody wants a single shot when you can get a pump for not much more.
Yeah, well, that was kind of my thought too, is I think like Steven has the pump shotguns for a pretty reasonable price. I'm trying to remember. I feel like FOC had a sale on them just recently.
Well, another one too is that H&R, even though they're defunct as an arms maker, they still import the Turkish-made pumps. You can still get an H&R gun, but they just don't manufacture the single shots in the States anymore. It's the guns made in Turkey, and they're for like $250, $300, so.
Yeah.
The nice thing about them is that they're very light. Like, I can hunt with my single shot has 30-inch barrels. And it, because it's so light, you can carry it all day and it balances nicely.
All right. Well, this week our main topic is with Barry from Persec Aware and it's an interview. So we'll get right over to that right now. All right. So now we are joined by Barry from Persec Aware. How are you tonight, Barry?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it. So your company is Persec Aware. Where does that come from?
You know, PerSec just being just a shortened for personal security. I mean, to take it even back further, I mean, another thing that I used to do when I was younger was a DJ, and that was my DJ name, PerSec. So it's kind of something that I've used on and off for probably the last 10 or 15 years, and, you know, just kind of adopted it to this. But, you know, I mean, it's just, it was kind of, you know, anybody who's kind of in the know, all the cool kids out there about tactical stuff, I mean, kind of know what PerSec is and what it's about. So it's just kind of it's just a name that isn't sort of have tactical or, you know, all of the other, you know, 5-cent words that people describe themselves when it comes to retailers and, you know, manufacturers and such. So,
yeah, not the usual buzzwords that people like to associate to themselves.
Yeah.
And for the record, I didn't know what PerSec meant. So
now you do.
Yeah, now I do. Okay. So you make gun belts
and other things. But yeah, I mean, gun belt seems to be, what people are knowing me for most of the time at the moment.
Okay. So how did you end up getting into making gun belts?
Well, I mean, I've been kind of, you know, I learned to sew, like back in the early 80s in like grade 7 home ec, and always had a sewing machine in the house with my mom, and can always remember her, you know, hemming jeans, repairing clothes, whatever. And it's just something that I've always done. You know, after a while, just hemmed my own jeans and did my own, you know, alteration to clothes or what have you. And, you know, once I got into the world of paintball and then actually got involved in airsoft, I mean, it was a whole new world just making, modifying gear. The gun belt thing, I mean, the first time I ever tried a traditional battle belt, you know, they're great when you're standing still, but the moment you start moving around, it's game over. I mean, that thing's going around you like a hula hoop. So, you know, I just figured there was a better way and started, you know, using the traditional belt keepers, which were just a pain just to get things on and off, because once it was on, you're basically stuck with it on. So then Velcro came into it, just having like a duty belt inner, and then putting some Velcro, and then, you know, modifying an outer belt to put some Velcro. And then here we are, that what you see is where it's at right now.
Okay, so your flagship product is a inside-outside style belt then?
Correct. So it's a two-part system. Basically, it's a two-inch scuba webbing inner belt, which I don't know if you've ever handled, but just the fact when scuba diving and you're making your weights and making those weight belts just to keep you down, I mean, that stuff, like, I mean, you can't even hardly – well, I can't even compress it in my hand squeezing it. But yeah, and then I just wrap that in Velcro, and then the outer belt's got the other half on it. So the two just marry together, lock it, and then just in the front with the Cobra buckle. It ain't going anywhere.
Okay, so it has a Cobra buckle as opposed to the, what I would call the competition inside-outside belt, where it's just a Velcro that just sticks on.
Correct.
Yeah, so it's not just endless amounts of belt just wrapped around you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I size them for, you know, your particular waist. So, I mean, there is a bit of play, but yeah, I mean, they just lock, everything just locks together just to one solid unit.
Okay, that sounds good. So where are you located?
I'm in East Toronto.
Okay. So this is all made in Canada products then?
That is correct. I mean, obviously the materials aren't, but everything is done exactly where I'm sitting right now.
Okay. So does that mean you're a one-man operation at this point in time?
That's it. I'm just a one-man operation.
Okay. So what are some other different styles, colored options that you can choose to put on your belt?
Well, I mean, I build them on request. So, I mean, whatever, you know, an individual wants, whether it's color, you know, any type of layout, do they want more Molly looping on it, less Molly looping? You know, I'm sort of opening and you know, game for anything they want to throw at me. Or even in, you know, there's a product called HDPE, which is a plastic material. And you can buy it in sort of, you know, thin sheets that are like about a millimeter. And I will actually sew that into belts if they want them really stiff. But, you know, it's open, you know, for whatever the person wants.
Okay. Can you wear the outside belt as the only belt you have if you wanted to?
The outside belt? I mean, yeah, I mean, theoretically you could. It probably wouldn't be that comfortable, and over a while would probably damage your pants, because the outer belt actually has the hook or the hard side of the Velcro.
Okay.
So, I mean, after a while, I mean, even with my belts, I mean, you know, you run the urinar through your belt loops, and, you know, I've got some pants that I wear, you know, when I'm wearing that belt. I mean, and after a while you do start to see some like puckering or balling on the belt loops, you know, but yeah, if you wore it all the time, probably wouldn't be a good thing.
Okay. If someone wanted one of your belts just as a belt without the inside outside capability, could you make one just without the Velcro on it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, anything's possible.
Okay, I'm just thinking of, I shoot IDPA, and in IDPA you're not allowed to have an inside-outside belt.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, so having the ability to just thread it through would be beneficial for being able to use it for that, as well as using it for other types of competition.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do you sell other than belts?
Well, I mean, my first thing that I was making was beaver tails for backpacks. And if you're not familiar with that, it's essentially a sheet of whatever material you want to use that you would attach some way to to your backpack that you could put, you know, overload items into. It was just simply a flap that you could cinch down. You know, you could put, you know, especially if you're spending a couple of days out in the woods, you know, a wet tarp, a wet tent. You can carry wood into it. You can even drop it down and, you know, put a long gun into it. So there was a lot of versatility with it. And it was just, you know, I made a belt from someone and it just kind of grew. But yeah, I started out making these beaver tails.
Okay.
I had to actually Google that when we first talked and you're like, yeah, I make slings, beaver tails and belts. And I was like, okay, what's a beaver tail?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know the pastry that you eat.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those things, like, you know, like you get into a situation like, oh, man, I wish there was a thing I could attach to the back of this pack. And then you go, oh, it's a beaver tail. And you're like, oh, there you go. But, yeah, I mean, if you never had a need for one, you probably wouldn't know what it's for, right?
Yeah. Well, the only time I ever had to use something like that was just like a helmet keeper on the back back of a knapsack. So.
Yeah, you can do that for sure.
Okay, and your belt, you ship them mostly with like a Molly on them?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I started, you know, sort of prototyping, and I've sent out actually a few belts for R&D, quote unquote, just to random people that had sort of reached out to me just to check them out, you know, just various designs of, like, you know, how you were saying with your, you know, you can't wear like a two-belt system. But this is sort of getting into just a single belt, whether it be, you know, a Velcro closure or just one small Cobra buckle with combination of Velcro. Yeah. So I'm sort of looking at that as well as another option.
Okay. Anything else in development that you can talk about?
Well, yeah, I started working on some padded slings. My initial slings really weren't meant for prolonged, like, patrolling type things. It was really meant for running and gunning, you know, so I knew that I probably would have to bring, like, I was getting asked if they were padded. I guess people, you know, just like wearing padded slings. I've never had one. I've actually did a couple of prototypes yesterday. So hopefully I'll have something in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. Is that a 1 or 2 point sling system?
2 point.
2 point, okay.
Yeah, so I'm just fiddling out the details. I mean, you wouldn't think working with foam would be such a pain, but I can attest it is a pain.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do our listeners get in contact with you if they want to order something?
Well, in absence of an actual website, I mean, if they find me on Instagram or Facebook, they can just message me there. And usually, like, people ask, how do I get one of these? I usually message them right away as I see it. Or just either through Instagram or Facebook at this point.
Okay. And I assume since those are both picture-heavy social media sites, they could look through your pictures and find any customization or colors that they wish to put in there.
Yeah, anytime I sort of get asked for new color combos or, you know, any modification, I usually put pictures up. You know, usually when people ask, I just say, hey, well, you know, the world's your oyster. You tell me what you want.
Yeah. And as someone who's custom making them in the house, really, I assume pretty much any request, or I shouldn't say you'll do any request, but you'll take any request and you'll discuss the realistic possibility of anything.
Yeah, I mean, it really is just sort of dependent on the materials I have on hand, you know, and usually, I mean, the sad thing about being in Canada, that it really isn't like a supplier. There is one in Montreal. I mean, they have quite a bit of stuff, but most of what I have to get, I need to go through the U.S. for. And you can imagine with our dollar and shipping and everything else, you know, I usually wait to get one big bulk order. And so, I mean, there may be a delay in timing, but, you know, I try and keep a pretty good stock. But, you know, for the odd thing, you know, if someone's asking for flame orange, you know, webbing or something, I obviously have to special order that.
Yeah. What's the lead time on a standard belt, something that you already have stuff on hand for?
Usually about 48 to 72 hours.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So very quick.
Yeah.
What's the starting price on a basic belt?
For anyone in Canada, I'm starting at 130 ship.
Now, is that including the inner belt as well?
That's everything.
Okay. That's a fair deal because it'll cost you that much to get an Ernie Hill set up here.
Yeah.
How much it'll cost you to get a regular belt in the States before shipping and importation and anything else. Yeah, you're really showing up ahead before anyone else.
Well, yeah. Price-wise. I realize in some respect I'm probably dropping my pants and selling these, but you know, it's kind of one of those things I figure, well, as a relative unknown, I kind of sweeten the pot a little bit.
I don't even think that because I'm just saying, like, if someone's in the States, right, and they want to get a belt, they'll probably pay the same in U.S. dollars, and they don't have. But if as someone in Canada, we're gonna pay in Canadian dollars, so we're losing whatever it is. It's like 30% now, plus shipping, plus if there's importation fees or duties or something. So even if I think your price is on par with what's in the States, but you know, we're skipping out all the extra costs of shipping it over the border.
Well, because two main companies I guess that would sort of be very similar would be Ronin Tactics and Tier Tactical. And I think the last time I looked on Ronin's website, I think his entry-level belt was about 130 US. And I know I've ordered some other things from him in the past, and you know, shipping, import fees. You know, I would have suspect that belt landed here at $130 would probably be just over 200 Canadian by the time it gets to your door. And I think the Tier Tactical is about 114 US, and that doesn't even include an inner belt. So,
okay. So great pricing. That's the moral of the story there.
Yeah, for now. I mean, things could change.
So order quick. Get your order in now while the prices are good.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, I just I got this other material called Hypalon. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but it's basically a rubberized material that was primarily used in the marine industry for, Zodiac boats. So it's this rubber, thick, heavy, you know, obviously completely waterproof, no stretch to it at all or very minimal. But, you know, it has a... You know, I think the actual breaking strength on it is greater than, you know, your traditional nylon webbing. But I mean, like a lot of companies like Blue Force Gear and their Helium Whisper line, they use it. Cry Precision's using it on their, like their, in their shoulder pads. And it seems to be the cool material these days that everyone is going with. So I just got some of that, so I'm going to be playing with it as well. So, you know, I mean, that will probably drive the cost up if people opt for that.
Yeah, the price will reflect whatever components you want added to it.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Does anyone else have any questions?
No, but it sounds like a great place to get that duty belt you're talking about, Mike. You can get a regular-looking belt and just get them to stitch in that really thick plastic in the center. And that way you still have a normal looking belt, but it'll be really rigid to hold your gear and it'll be IDPA legal.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Cause I'm kind of cheating it's legal, but I'm using the outside belt for my, three gun setup and just putting that in there because it's the stiffest belt that I can find. Even the nylon kind of belt that I've used for years, you know, when you compare that to what you get for the inside outside belt, it's nothing. So I do that, but it's big, it's bulky, and like you said, it has the hooks on it, and you can tell what pants I've worn it on because it starts pulling all the threads out with it. So having something that would be very incredibly stiff, but yet, you know, able to put on the inside much easier would be very beneficial.
Because what size belt would you be thinking about? Like a 1¾ inch, 1½, 2 inch?
I believe 1¾. I believe that's what I'd have to double check it right now and see what, cause IDPA also has rules on how thick how big your belt can be too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're.
it's like Formula One racing, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know if there's anything that they don't have a rule on. but yeah.
How much are the slings?
Right now I'm selling them for 30. And I think once I get the padded option, it probably won't be much more than that. I mean, I figure maybe 40 it might go up to, but yeah, that's what they're at.
Am I right to assume that there's a quick cinch option on there? Like, I'm just looking at, I think it's your second most recent photo.
Yeah, it's just the way that the webbing is looped through that, which is essentially just, you know, like the on your shoulder pad on a backpack, you can pull them down to cinch it tight. Essentially, that's all that is. So with that piece of paracord and the little hole at the bottom, you know, you can pull it straight down and, you know, shorten it. I usually suggest between 8 to 9 inches. It literally will suck it right into your body, and it will quickly, as quickly as you can pull it in or out, it will tighten or loosen it.
What kind of attachment points are you putting on your sling right now?
I don't use any. It's just, I figured because everybody has their, you know, their preference to what they want to use, if it's a mash hook or an HK style hook or quick couplers, and then whatever it is they're running on their blasters, you know, I just, you know, I figure, well, I'll leave it up to you. And I always put that out here, just let you know, it ain't going to come with any hardware. I mean, for my own personal guns, I just use regular 550 paracord.
Okay.
It's cheap, super light, and makes no noise.
It works well for, like you said, because everyone connects in a different way. It gives everyone the option to not spend money on, you know, an attachment method that they're not going to use. So.
And something they may have, you know, half a dozen sitting on their gun bench, right? So, I just leave it out of the equation entirely.
Yeah. So your slings terminate in just a regular loop of the webbing then? And then you can figure out, then people attach their hardware that way?
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just sort of looped through what they call like the tri-glide. So you just kind of unloop it and then put whatever fixture you want on it to attach it to your gun.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah, you asked about the IDPA belt, 1 3/4 inches thick and 5/16 inch wide. Or sorry, other way around.
Round.
Yeah. Yeah. However you want to read into that. Yeah.
5/16. Yeah. I'm just trying to think.
Last time I checked, 5/16 was a lot wider than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, yeah. That's just over half an inch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is webbing is a science. Material science is ridiculous. The one thing that I learned is just how much different styles of webbing there is out there. But yeah, I mean, probably like a 1.5 inch double stacked scuba webbing, it would probably, you know, rip you in half before it gave out.
Yeah. I was going to say that's good. Well, not good being ripped in half, but that's good to know that it's not going to be the weak point.
No.
Yeah. Awesome. Do you guys have any other questions?
No, it sounds awesome. I'm seriously considering whether what you're talking about, Mike, I wouldn't mind getting a regular looking belt for IDP that's super rigid so I can put my holster on.
Yeah.
Because all I've got is duty belts and I didn't know I couldn't use them, so.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming on. And one last time, do you want to let our listeners know how they can get a hold of you so they can order one of these belts?
Yeah, I mean, you can just reach me on Instagram. Just search PerSecAware. Once you find me, you can just message me through there or just on my Facebook page. Again, just search PerSecAware, and you can message me there as well. And I'll be more than happy to try and help you out.
Which is where I found them because I looked them up on Facebook.
What?
All right. Well, thank you very much again for coming on.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, talk to you soon.
Have a good night.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you again, Barry, for coming on the show. That was a great interview. One point I just want to make, he said at one point that 5/16 was just over half an inch. It's just under half an inch, but minor details. All right, so moving on, events. Benny, what's event number one?
There is no event. Oh, we have no events.
No, we have
there are no events.
There's
don't
nothing in the show
like
notes.
Nothing's freaking going on. I guess there's literally nothing going on in the world right now. If you have an event that you'd like us to advertise, send it on over at host@newshootercanada.ca. All right, listener email. Thomas, you want to read this one?
Oh, great. You want me to read the email about myself? Okay. Gentlemen,
And I'll do it.
Okay.
I've always supported and followed Thomas's tagline, take your kids shooting, but it wasn't strong on Mike's time spent on the range is spent with family. My darling wife is not a strong shooter as she's not able to close one eye in the traditional sight of a pistol. We tried shooting with both eyes open and even tried putting a blinder over one of the shooting lenses, but she still was not comfortable with either of these solutions. So while the boys and I were plinking away, my dear wife would sit and watch. So to get around this, I recently built a Donnelly. I took a compensated Ruger Mark I and added a Browning reflex sight. Nothing fancy, but needs my wife's needs, and now we are shooting as a family. Like an AR-15, everyone should have a Donnelly in their safe. Your devoted listener, Thomas. Thank you, Thomas. Well, that's the beauty of a red dot. You keep both eyes open, so you don't have to worry about lining up your sights. Your dominant eye takes over either way, so...
Yeah.
Unless you're going blind like me.
It's a reflex with me. I still close one eye.
Yeah.
I think I was experimenting a little bit with the Ragnarok course, but I realized that I instinctively close one eye.
Yeah. I do the same thing too. I try and break it when I'm shooting with a pistol, doing like dry fire at home, and I have to keep telling myself, both eyes open, both eyes open. But yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think the red dot really is good for... The other thing, too, is for taking out new shooters, right? Like you said, it's great for... There's a lot less complication to it, right? You tell someone who's new at this, you know, pretty much put the red dot on your target and pull the trigger.
Well, we had that last week. We had actually one of the new employees at Silverdale, a young lady. I forget her name, but she's one that got hot bacon grease spilled on her. She's left, right-handed, left eye dominant, and she was having a really hard time getting her sight picture. So then when she's picking up the red dot, I just looked over and I saw she was closing the one eye. I said, no, don't, keep both eyes open. And her shots greatly improved after that.
Yeah. Well, it's just one last thing that you have to think about, right? You're not worrying about lining up your up and down, your left and right of the rear notch in the front post. So, yep. A great thing to have. If I shot 22 more often, maybe I'd bother buying one, but I haven't, besides the Maple, actually, no, I didn't even shoot the 22 at the charity shoot for the Maple Seed course. I don't even know when the last time I shot a 22 was.
Huh. I love 22s. I shoot one. I always bring a 22 to the range with me.
Oh, I rarely shoot it anymore. I don't know. Maybe it's because I figure my time at the range is limited now. I'd rather spend it practicing for IDPA or ICOR or something like that than doing 22 shooting. But oh, please send any feedback, questions, or comments you may have to host@newshootercanada.ca, our Facebook page, or in the comment section on our website at newshootercanada.ca. And now that I say that, we did have a comment last week that didn't make it into this show. Didn't we, Betty?
Oh, yes, we did.
I don't see this stuff. Someone else... take it.
Yep. So it says, hey guys, just thought I'd let you know that I'm starting to listen to the show. You guys have way too much fun. Good job as always. That's from Mulcadina.
That's Mrs. Yeah. Benny.
Yeah. I always have to watch what I say because my dad still listens to the show. So
when I first saw that, I'm like, why is Benny making a comment on his own show that he just started to listen?
Yeah, you know, just all the backlog episodes, got to catch up, and no, I'm kidding. It's my wife.
So, no new iTunes or Stitcher reviews. Facebook likes, did someone look that up?
We were at 1,131 this afternoon.
Awesome.
Ooh, we're climbing.
All right, so shout-outs. Thomas.
Shout-out this week is to George. Thanks for coming on last week. But I'm still going to throw him under the bus, because he actually put comments in the show notes, so we assumed he was going to be on the show tonight, and he checked out something about being in pain and not being able to make it tonight. But George, it was great having you on last week. It felt like old times. We hope you come back.
Yeah, you fought through the pain this week.
I'm dying.
I'm absolutely the pain dying every week.
Fighting through with arthritis.
No, dealing with you too. That's the pain I'm fighting.
Massive amounts of migraines. Oh. Benny, you have any shout outs?
Yes, I do. The soldier in Israel who stopped the terrorist stopped the terrorist attack after it started on Friday night. injuring the terrorist after he stabbed and killed three people at their Friday night dinner. So shout out to him for standing up and doing what needed to be done. Persek Ware, thank you for coming on and doing the interview. And my wife, as usual. And happy birthday to her.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday, Mel.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, that's my shout outs for this week.
My shout out is also to Barry from Persek for coming on, doing an interview with us. The SOs at the Frontenac I-Corps mat today, and Rod for running the club, as well as letting me try out the new holster. Sometimes it's hard to try out new gear without having to go out there and buy it, especially I find in the firearms community. So it was really nice of him to let me just take the holster and no worries, just give it a try. And if I like it, take it. And if I don't, then I don't, give it back. So thank you very much.
Awesome.
All right, Thomas, you want to take us on out of here?
Okay, until next week, keep your barrels downrange and smoking.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
It's not about the odds, it's about the stakes.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
So you know what this means, Benny, is that you gotta watch what you say, because we know who's listening to the show now.